Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, Expert Edition, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and a vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
I'm David Lee.
And I'm Mac Antigua. Expert Edition, that's right. This is a unique sort of mini-series within the pod that we're going to explore, and we're going to invite artists to really talk about what do they see through their eyes as an expert of their craft that maybe people who aren't experts don't usually see. And so we're going to ask them to kind of give us the game within the game, if you will. And our hope is that maybe you as a listener will pick up something new or maybe pick up another take at looking at something when you're experiencing art or experiencing culture. David, how about you? What is something for you that, you know, you have an expertise on or an insight on, and what are the set of lenses you have when you experience it?
Yeah. So I went to a performing arts high school, and one of the first things they taught in acting class was always cheat out a little bit to the audience, right? So people can see you. Basically, it's very practical advice, right? It's a very practical skill in acting. And so, but when you're acting, you know, you're talking with your hands, you're making choices, you're moving around the stage. So you always have to have some physical awareness of where you are in relationship to the audience. And so when you're gesturing, it was drilled into my head early on, you always gesture with your upstage hand. Mm. So it helps you, or your upstage arm, right? So it helps you to always stay open, right, to the audience. And so whenever I see a show and somebody hasn't basically counted out their steps on a cross across stage, and they end up a little bit closed off to the audience, or they're gesturing with their downstage arm, I'm always a little bit like, huh, I'm really curious about that choice, right? Like what is it about that choice? What's that acting choice at that moment that sort of led that actor to say, you know what, this is the time where I'm going to break the fundamental rule of stage acting, which is always keep yourself open to the audience, or if it was just a mistake, right? So it's one of those, like, it's like a interesting, like, red flag, right? Or a flag where, where my spidey sense goes off.
I think for me, as an improviser, in Chicago and then performing throughout the country as I move throughout the country, I pay attention to when I check an improv show out, where am I seated in relation to the stage? Sometimes stages are raised and sometimes stages are just straight floor and I'm at the same level, or sometimes there's a little riser, maybe about 6 inches to a foot. I think I really like pay attention to that because sometimes I feel like the show's more intimate if I actually am not looking up at an actor. If that makes sense, if I'm actually kind of with them or looking at them. I also look at what's the space between the stage and the audience. Sometimes you're in a cabaret, sometimes you're in small settings. These things affect sort of how I interact, and sometimes it invites the performers to play more intimately if the house is right on top of them, or if the house is like literally on top of them in terms of their height. And that's something I actually prefer it if I'm actually above the actors, because then I get to feel it with them. And another thing I like to look at during, especially ensemble pieces, is I look at the eyes. I like to look at where the actors are looking at. Are they looking at their scene partner? Are they looking at the people off stage who are going to make entrances and exits? I notice really good ensembles are always looking at each other in the eyes, because usually scenes are relationship based. That's what I pay attention. And usually groups that don't do as well or struggle, it's because they're not looking at each other. They're not paying attention to each other's eyes. That's what I look at.
So we are obviously very interested in how our city's artists and creatives see the world that they participate in. So after the break, we're going to have four really interesting viewpoints from administrators, artists, and teachers to talk about what they see. So after the break, you will hear in order Julia Griffith from Historic Milwaukee. You will hear Carlise Kelly from Panadansa Dance Company. You will hear from Adam Kudishat, and you will hear from Britt Nicole.
Love, you gotta be so far. Love, you gotta be so long. Why you gotta be? Where you gotta be? Where you gotta be? Where you gotta be?
Well, a couple of things. If I walk into a historic house, I always go to the basement first.
Ooh.
Basements are usually unfinished enough or close enough to their original, it's not like a great idea to destroy your basement. The rest of your house will fall down on top of you, you know?
So you try to keep it kind of the same way that...
Structural integrity and all that stuff. But in the basement, you're going to get the most clues about the original version of what you're looking at and change, because people cut through the floor to run new pipes or, you know, flooring material will look different. Even the spacing or sizing of wooden members. Like we haven't always had dimensional lumber. So like 2x4s weren't always standard. So you can learn a lot about that. So in a house, I usually almost, if I'm trying to answer a bunch of questions for myself, I go to the basement. In terms of like an exterior or walking through a historic area, I look at variety of material more than anything. First, that's kind of the first thing you notice. And then often I look for things that are missing. So in Milwaukee, we have a lot of buildings with kind of naked roof lines. So they would have originally had cornices, terracotta cornices. Terracotta is a material that doesn't like snow or cold. Those. So more often than not, they were taken off.
Right.
And so usually that's how I'm like, oh, okay, so that probably would have been the Wells Building's a great example.
Did somebody not know that it gets cold here?
Terracotta is
those Italians. Yeah. They're very stubborn in how they want to have their architecture.
Yeah, it's an affordable way to make intricate materials.
Sure.
And you can't really use anything else. You can't like use plaster, and wood would be really expensive, and real stone too heavy or really expensive.
But they probably found that out after the first winter. Like, oh, this is not going to work.
Yeah, yeah. So the one
then it went away. They're like,
yeah, right. So, and sometimes that damage and change takes longer.
Okay.
But so that's, I guess, when things all have similar materials, you sort of think, okay, well, it's either they're all trying to match, which you see a lot on college campuses. UVA is a great example. Or in the Third Ward, they're all built around the same time because of the fire. So for me, that's part of it. It's just like kind of the colors and textures of material first. And then even at this point, like architectural styles, you know, have their own kit of parts where you pick out what you like and you get sort of the resulting equation is Italianate or Gothic Revival, which is great. The other thing I would say, too, is kind of the monumental buildings, the sort of difference makers.
Oh.
Churches are good. They sort of can point you in the direction of like what the community might have been. In terms of like historic ethnic patterns or any change over time in that way. It always depends on the city because every place has their own sort of differences. It's amazing to me too how many most people wouldn't compare Philadelphia and Milwaukee, but you can.
I was just going to ask you, like, comparables, and so they're very similar.
Yeah. I mean, Philadelphia and the East Coast has that strong row house.
Yep.
Repetition, but at the same time, we have that here in Milwaukee, Polish flats or puddlers cottages. Like you see repetition because it's easy. And then, you know, I live in River West and there's blocks and blocks of similar houses over and over because it's easy to make up two plans and you just build one, two. So some of it is just that kind of thing where it's I have quick pattern recognition just from practice.
Yep.
And then it's sort of like a detective. You get to like dissect it. But yeah, basements are the best. If I'm sending anybody anywhere, it's to a basement to look up and sort of diagram what you're looking at. Love, you gotta be so cruel.
For me, is the authenticity behind the movement. So that feeling, that realness, that connection that the dancer has within themselves and within what's happening around them and the audience. So like, if there's an effort, if it's joy, if it's sorrow, whatever it is that feeling, that connection to it. For me, that's it. Yeah, I just feel like movement doesn't lie, and whatever you do in between the steps is the real cross. So for me, I look for what's in between the steps. Love, you gotta be so fine.
Sure. The first thing I'm looking for is the writing of whatever piece, you know, is going on. What's the story that's being told? Because really, at the end of the day, acting, dancing, singing, whatever it is, we're storytelling. And so I key in on that first. Like, what is the story? How am I being affected emotionally? One of the things that drives me crazy is when you have really bad exposition. So, you know, if a character's like, hey, remember when we did this, and goes on like a paragraph long description of what happened to a you don't talk like that to other people. That exposition has to feel natural. It's hard to do. That's what makes it challenging to be a good writer. But so often I just hear, hey, remember when we were in third grade and we got thrown in the garbage? Nobody says that. Nobody talks like that. So why are you expecting me to invest in your story when you've just given me something that completely destroys my suspension of disbelief? And things like that I tend to look for. Then I look for acting, if it's a play or whatever it is. Usually, you know, actors are great, and I'm looking for the things that the little things that they do that really sell me on the character, especially because the acting community in Milwaukee is pretty small. I tend to key in on, you know, I know this person. What are they doing that's different from who they normally are? You know, it's really interesting to me. What are the subtle things that they're doing? But you know, there are habits and things that, you know, I can always tell when an actor is thinking about the audience. It's sort of like an emotional sixth sense. It's always a sense of they've disconnected from the person that they're talking to in the scene. So then whatever's happening, whatever they're doing, it has a sort of a film over it. It's not real because they've invited someone else into the conversation that's not there.
I look for how I'm going to be moved by the story, because I have seen people with confidence, borderline arrogance, say stuff that just really wasn't of substance. They just put a lot of fancy wordplay together that either went over your head, it didn't match up, make sense at all. And I've seen people shaking with the notebook in their hand, and it moved me to tears, because really it's just them finding value in their voice. And I'm emotional anyway. I'm a Pisces and all that kind of stuff. So I'm up here, you know, but how I connect, you know, with your words. Like, if you're bringing me into that story, like if I'm right there and I'm going down that block with you, or sitting there that time you cried, or, you know, when your heart got broken, I want to whip him too. Like, why did you break her heart? And so... You know, that's, I want to see how I move. And that's why I don't do well in slam poetry. I can judge, and I have been a judge, but I would never be a slam poet, because I don't believe in it. I think it's an ego booster and a self-esteem killer. I mean, how do you judge everyone's pieces are different? How do you judge that? Like, that was worth a 10, that was worth a 7, unless you're like going over time, like technical stuff. So I can't in good conscience for me do that. I'm going to give you 10s all around, because you brought me into that story with you. And that's awesome. Thank you for, you know, taking my hand and letting me journey with you those words. The last Lyrical Sanctuary, which was March. And being a host is hard, because I'm sitting right at the front, fangirling like a creep. It doesn't matter who you are. I especially love my first timers that come to the microphone. It does something to me. Or it's like, I haven't written in a long time, but for some reason I chose this night. Like, something was about this night that made me want to share. Okay, what? And so there's these two young men, and they are in rapping, and you can just feel the vibe. Like, their vibe with each other is so dope. And it was like, this is our first time, like, really, really performing. We just kind of been in our little booth, you know, writing and whatever. But they are literally bouncing. The energy is so crazy. I've already, like, memorized the hook. So now I'm up here jamming with the hook with them. And I'm feeding them this amazing energy that they're already giving to me. And I don't even know them. I feel like a proud auntie or something, a proud big sister. Like, that's what it is. And I'm like, you better come back next time and all the other times. And how do we stay connected? And I was on the brink of tears, because I was just so happy. Like, they were so happy to have an audience to shine the light with. And then I am hosting or facilitating that space in just that. That's an honor, you know, and I don't take that lightly. And it's hard for for me sometimes on a Wednesday night when I'm tired, I've worked all day or something, and I'm like, and you can see my soul is drained and I just need the energy of the people. And sometimes they're just sitting there like, move me. You know, so they're not hype, like, they just kind of like, and that was great. And I'm like, all right, whatever we need to do to get to 10 o'clock, I'm rolling with you. I'm feeling the energy. We're going to get this as a family together. But seeing them, and then they had the crowd hype. They got some people snapping with them, some people clapping with them, you know, and I wanted them to come back, and we had the time because not a lot of people had signed up. And I was like, do y'all have another one in the chamber? I know you do. And they were just so excited, like, you want to really let us do it again? I said, hey, I'm the host. I'm going to flex whatever little power that I have. And yeah, it keeps me from having to spit. So yes, you're definitely going to go again. And I loved it. And then building with them afterwards, you know, and they're like, we kind of heard about you and we just wanted to come see. And I'm like, oh geez, you heard about me? Oh, okay. But they felt so amazing in that space. They were well received. And that's what we do. That's the kind of stuff, like, you know, I don't care if they would have stumbled on their words. I've stumbled on my words plenty of times. You keep it going. You're here to develop, cultivate, keep coming. So you can, if you can't spit or do your art in a room full of 10 people or 30 people, what you gonna do with 300 or 100? Nothing. You got, because if you don't feel it and it scares you, they won't even get the art because they're gonna see all that fear all over you. So it's nice having a familiar face in the crowd that says, you got this. So if I have to be everyone's cheerleader in the audience and say, you got this, or just talk to me, don't even look at them, just look at me. Spit it to me because you feel me and I'm gonna give it back to you. And that's kind of my contribution. But yeah, that's generally how I feel when they move me. I'm in it with them and I'm so glad. And then I have to like turn my host hat back on. I'm like, shoot, I gotta call the next person. And I'm marinating that stuff. So it's hard. I'm playing two roles. I'm the receiver and the facilitator. And sometimes I have to be the giver. I honestly start off a poem just to kind of break the ice. I'm like the human icebreaker to make it good for everyone. So I'm playing multiple roles and I have to remember that because I'll be in the thick of that. I'm like, okay, Britt, relax, relate, release, zone in. We got another person to call. And I just, you know, so yeah, that's when they move me, I'm moved. It's a wrap.
That was cool.
That was so interesting.
Was a quick takeaway from those four.
This is going to sound a little serial killery, but basements are the best.
Basements are the best. You get to see the bones. Let's keep doing these episodes anyway.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear from more folks. And if you are interested in sharing some of your expertise with us on this pod, please hit us up at pod@imaginemke.org. Thanks as always for listening. Please rate us 5 stars, share a positive review because it really helps people find us.
And if you're on social, hit us up at Twitter, Instagram @imagine_MKE. And if you're on Facebook, like a lot of people, we're just Imagine MKE right there. And mention the pod and there, and we'll be happy to make you a hashtag imaginary friend. Until then, we look forward to talking to you real soon.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.